Alex Neve, thank you for joining me today.
Thanks so much for the interest.
Mr. Neve, tell me, first of all, what prompted this research into this situation between China and Chinese Canadians?
Well, Amnesty International is a member of a longstanding coalition here in the country of organizations that are concerned about the human rights situation in China and have come together in a coalition that has focused in particular on Canada's relationship with China and what opportunities that gives us to be pushing for human rights improvements and change in China. And this coalition goes back to the late 1990s, in fact, and it's made up of organizations that are both large and well-known, like Amnesty International, the Canadian Labour Congress, and also a number of organizations that are very focused within ethnic or religious communities here in Canada. So there's Tibetan Canadian organizations, Uyghur Canadian organizations, pro-democracy organizations that are here in Canada within the Chinese community. And over the years, those organizations in particular have frequently at our coalition meetings shared very serious concerns about the kind of harassment and intimidation and interference that they have been experiencing going back many years now, and which, in their view, was almost certainly a result, directly or indirectly, of actions being taken by Chinese officials. And clearly, they felt it was an effort to shut them down, intimidate them, and dissuade them from carrying forward with their human rights group activities. And we felt this needed some attention.
What forms of intimidation are we talking about?
It's a wide variety of forms. Much of it takes place in the digital sphere. So activists are experiencing cyber attacks, having their computer systems, for instance, hacked and taken over, and malware and those sorts of things. There's a lot of harassment and threats. Sometimes it comes directly with individuals receiving phone calls in which they receive threats, sometimes very worrying threats. There's also direct interference, so harassment at demonstrations and public events. Some activists report individuals showing up at events or at their workplaces, even asking questions and clearly being intimidating. And then the last aspect is we've noted that family members of individuals who are here in Canada, but who themselves are still living back in China, they've experienced difficulties as well, have sometimes been called in or received some kinds of threats, which almost certainly seem to be related to the human rights activities that their loved ones are carrying out here in Canada.
Well, what kind of threats? What's the nature of these threats? And let's be clear about who's making them.
Well, we don't have a lot of clarity as to who. It's obviously not so direct as, you know, someone from the embassy here in Canada shows up. It's much more shadowy than that. And so we've not, in this report from the coalition, by any means pointed a finger and said that it is officials at the embassy. It is Chinese government officials. I think many of the people who have been receiving the threats and intimidation believe that that these are more indirectly connected to the embassy, and so that makes it a little bit more shadowy. The nature of the threats are meant to dissuade them from carrying forward in the activities. So they may receive threats that if they keep it up, something will happen to them. If they keep it up, something will happen to family members. Sometimes it's simply threats that are calling them names and insults, and then that in turn gets shared publicly as well.
I believe there have also been cases whereby, I guess you could call it fake news to discredit certain organizations has happened, like the Falun Gong, for example.
Oh, absolutely. There's been frequent instances of that. The Falun Gong is perhaps the organization that has experienced the most of that sort of intimidation and slander, fake news, as we now call it. There are pro-democracy groups as well that have, where simply blatantly untruth and often inflammatory and very insulting things about individual activists or about the organizations as a whole are circulated widely through email, through social media, and other channels, and that causes great difficulties for the individuals and groups who are on the receiving end of that.
But if these threats and intimidation and so on are being performed against Chinese Canadians, to what end, really?
Well, it's part of a campaign of intimidation. These are individuals and groups who are concerned about the human rights situation in China. I think, as we all know, China continues to have a very troubling human rights record. And these are the groups and communities in China who are the ones experiencing those human rights violations. Tibetans, Uyghurs, practitioners of Falun Gong, individuals who are pursuing human rights advocacy and democratic reform in China. And the Chinese government in China responds very brutally to those communities. It's very clearly established, disappearances, arbitrary arrest, unlawful detention, widespread torture against individuals and organizations in China. So it's not surprising that the Chinese are also looking at ways to try to target, intimidate, and ultimately silence those voices outside of China as well. Obviously, they can't use the same direct tactics as arrest and disappearances and torture, but this is another way, perhaps, of trying to shut down those voices.
So this is an attempt, one might say, to silence international embarrassment of what they're doing. Is that the case?
That's a part of it. I think in a general sense, it's simply they want to shut down the voices, the activists, the organizations that are drawing attention to these human rights concerns, whether those are individuals doing so within China or outside of China. They want to shut it down.
Now, the Canadian government, of course, wants to increase trade ties and is playing very nice with China. What you sent this report to the government, what kind of reaction do you expect?
Well, the government has taken it very seriously. I really want to underscore that. And I think the report was something they thought was very helpful. They, too, have been aware of these instances and incidents over the years. But this is the first time, really, that the coalition has compiled it all in one place, rather than it being a series of what may start to appear as kind of one-off instances that happen here and there over the years. And I think the report, therefore, gives a real sense of how serious, how entrenched, how extensive this is, and that it really is a pattern. It's not just occasional cases of concern. So so we have been having some exchanges with the government and are starting to look at what are some of the options for moving forward. What's the role of police forces here? What's the role of CSIS? What's the role of foreign affairs officials? And how do we better coordinate it to ensure that activists and groups who experience this kind of intimidation have somewhere accessible and easy to turn to and don't get lost in the bureaucracy of various law enforcement and security agencies.
Just briefly, Alex Neave, how serious do you view this kind of activity?
We consider this to be a very serious concern. These are human rights violations, and while fortunately here we are in Canada, the individuals on the receiving end aren't experiencing the same level of gravity and severity as individuals in China do when they too experience similar human rights violations, it nonetheless is something that cannot and should not be happening. And certainly the individuals who have experienced it here in Canada find it very unsettling, a source of great anxiety, and they do find that it very significantly interferes with their ability and their right. This is a fundamental right to pursue human rights advocacy here in Canada. So it is by no means something trivial, and we will be continuing to monitor it very carefully. The coalition will certainly continue to engage with the Canadian government, and we hope that over the course of this year we may start to explore some solutions that can help better address it.
Alex Neave, thank you very much for this.
Thanks so much for your interest.